You are now listening to Wave E Sound.
Welcome to Versus Mike History. I am your host, Michael History. In episode 111, Kwasan joins the podcast to talk about financial literacy. We get into his background learning the financial market on his own, beating the odds of getting out the inner city as a black man, the journey that led to his first published book, and more. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Sign up for our newsletter for brand updates and join our members-only community on Patreon for access to exclusive programming. For everything else, go to versusmikehistory.com. Peace, fam. Welcome to another episode of Versus Mike History. I'm your host, Mike History, and we got Kwasan in the building.
Yo, yo, what's going on, man?
How you doing, my brother? How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm good. No complaints.
How about you go ahead and introduce yourself for the people?
So my name is Kwasan. I go by the name of Q. I'm a financial analyst by day, entrepreneur by night, recently self-published author. I'm passionate about financial literacy, man. I always have been into the financial market since I was a kid, and now, you know, just kind of working in that space and just, you know, publishing a book about it, you know. I just want to kind of share that information with youth, right? Inner city youth, more specifically, you know, because I was once in their shoes and I didn't have nobody to teach me about financial literacy. So, you know, I'm looking forward to diving into this conversation for sure.
Thank you. And one of the questions that I usually ask people when they come on the show is, what are you listening to? So what's pretty much been in your rotation as of lately?
So pop is actually my favorite genre, type of music, but it depends what space I'm in. Like, if I'm in a gym, I'm listening to trap.
Okay.
Lil Durk, 42, Herbo, Sue Surf, Meek Mill, like, you know, Gotti and stuff like that. So it definitely depends what type of space I'm in. You get what I'm saying? Like, if I'm cooking in a crib, I probably had 90s R&B playing while I'm cooking or something like that. You feel me? But it definitely depends what space I'm in.
Word. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the nitty gritty. Let's talk about your background. You said that you've been into the financial markets since you were a child. So let's talk about how you were first introduced to the markets.
No, that's a good question. Actually, I had to kind of teach myself about the financial markets. I just was always like, you know, I'll come across the news or something like that. You'll hear about the stock market, you know, growing up like in the projects, growing up in North. You know, the stock market, we ain't know nothing about that. It was always foreign to us. You get what I'm saying? So I didn't really have nobody to teach me about it. So I pretty much taught myself. I watched the markets and any word I didn't know, like if I was to hear the word stock and I didn't know what that meant, I created like this whole journal of just financial terminology. You get what I'm saying? And over time, I continued to build out that knowledge. And then when I turned on the markets and listened to it, I started to pick up on everything that was being said. So I didn't have no role models. I didn't have no family members or no coaches or anything that taught me specifically about the financial markets. So I pretty much had to teach myself. And that was my whole purpose. So, you know, we'll get into it later, but that's how the book came about and everything. So I can kind of save the youth from having to go through what I went through.
Absolutely. And you said that you were born and raised in Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Describe the surrounding environment while you were trying to, you know, gain all of this knowledge.
Yeah. So, you know, like most people from Newark or from the inner city, you get what I'm saying? There's certain things you have there's certain resistance you're met with, right? It's much harder. So my environment specifically, like I grew up in Baxter Terrace. It was a rough neighborhood surrounded with violence and things like that. You know, I was surrounded by homeboys who were either like, you know, involved in the streets and things of that nature. So when you're around it, you sort of, you know, they say guilty by association. You get what I'm saying? So I played ball, but I was very known from ball, and I had a lot of homeboys who was in the streets. So I was kind of like around them. You get what I'm saying? So a lot of people thought I was in the streets and thought I was in a gang and everything. Cause again, my homeboys was, but I would say one thing that saved me is the fact that I did play basketball, because a lot of the older dudes that was in a, you know, in the projects looking after me, you know, they kind of saw that I had this talent. So they didn't, you know, they kept me on track. You get what I'm saying? They looked at it as like, yo, this is a young kid. He's talented. Yo, stay in the gym. You know, you don't want this street life. Just stay in the gym. So I would say I was very appreciative of that, because they, even if I tried to, they wouldn't let me to go down that wrong path. You feel me?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So during this journey of learning the financial market as a youth, at what point was it that you started, while gaining this knowledge, did you start to gain people along the journey, like other people who are like-minded?
I'll say it started in college. I would say in college is when I really started to meet people who had a similar mindset to me, and we naturally just gravitated towards each other. Yeah, I'll say college, because I played ball in college, but it didn't start until after my sophomore year, because that's when I decided to walk away from the game completely. Mm-hmm. I had torn my meniscus in my senior year of high school. I had to get surgery. And from there, I was kind of rehabbing, trying to get my knee, you know, back in place, and so I could get back on the court, but it was giving me a lot of trouble. So I ended up walking away from the game completely my sophomore year. And then from there, I kind of took a hard dive into the financial markets. So that's when I started to really surround myself with people that was, you know, into the markets, surround myself with people that just overall had that mindset, you know, just started building my network out, because I understood how important a network can be and making the right connection and stuff like that. And, you know, so I kind of surrounded myself with people that was in that same space.
Understood. Would you say that, the journey that you had up until college, how would you explain that journey of financial knowledge? Like how much knowledge had you gained by the time you got to college? Were you day trading already? Did you have X amount of stocks? And like, what was the extent of the knowledge that you had?
Yeah. So the knowledge I gained throughout like high school and leading up to college, it really picked up in college. Like again, my sophomore year in college, once I decided to walk away from basketball, because basketball is my first love. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start investing until I could say I was a late bloomer in regard to investing. I wish I would have started sooner. But, you know, prior to really gaining this knowledge, I always thought I needed a specific amount of money, this large amount of money, to jump into the markets and start investing. You know, that's one of the things I would say we tend to misunderstand, is that we think we need all of this money, like you need $1 million or this. To invest, you don't need that. You can have $100 right now and invest in the stock market. You know, you can buy fractional shares of a specific company right now and continue to build that, you know. So I would say, yeah, once college really hit and I walked away from the game my sophomore year, that's when I started to invest. I traded options a little bit prior to my role. Options is like, you could think of options as a sort of, it's a contract where you don't necessarily own the shares, but you have the right to purchase the shares if certain conditions are met. You know, so you have the option to buy if this, you know, the underlying security, which are stocks, hit a specific specific point. But yeah, I'll definitely say I wish I would have started sooner.
So how would you describe the beginning of your journey once you really got into it, transitioning out of basketball, in terms of, you know, your lifestyle, how the people you hung out with, how you met the new people that would, you know, align with what you were trying to study, and how that led you to, you know, landing a good job out of college?
Okay. That's a good question. I'd say I naturally started to gravitate. Like once I walked away from ball and really started to get into the markets, I became a much more serious person. I noticed, I began to kind of separate myself a little bit because I knew exactly what I wanted and it wasn't basketball no more. So most of my peoples and my homeboys, like, they knew me from basketball, but even my family, right? They knew me from basketball, but I wanted to break that association to basketball. I didn't want to just be, okay, that's Papa from Newark, that's good in basketball. I wanted to kind of like rebrand and recreate myself. So I had to break down a lot of mental patterns that weren't serving me. I had to kind of break those down and kind of restructure and sort of shapeshift and rebuild myself. So I started surrounding myself with people that were into the markets. And like I said, that were into what I was into. And it was a difficult process because, you know, you start to, you kind of start to have like this new circle, right? You don't have the same circle in regard to like, I grew up with a lot of friends playing ball. So a lot of my friends, you know, I was away from that space and I was starting to like kind of get together with people in investment groups and people that kind of read books and things of that nature. You know, but it definitely was a difficult transition for sure.
I'm sure it was. And, you know, let's talk about life post college now. You done transition out of basketball, you done surrounded yourself with like-minded people, and you've put yourself on a path of success. Now yeah. You've gained a wonderful opportunity to go work at this company. And yeah. I want you to kind of walk us through how you were able to obtain the opportunity.
Okay. Yeah. So I work for Bloomberg. It's a global financial technology firm. I'm extremely grateful to be there, but it was a tough journey getting there. What most people don't see is that, you know, people tend to only see the successes, right? They don't see the failures and all the hard times and all the hard work that was put in on a back end behind the scenes. So I'm very big on putting in work behind the scenes. I'm actually a very reserved person. So I actually got rejected several times prior to getting my opportunity at Bloomberg. I probably applied to Bloomberg prior, probably about 3 or 4 times, and I got rejected, you know? Wow. Yeah, it was tough. After graduating, it was definitely a tough journey. I was working various jobs just to kind of, you know, make ends meet. But I always knew what my ultimate goal was, and that was to be connected to the financial markets. So, I got rejected. But one thing I didn't do is I didn't let it discourage me. I just looked at it as, all right, let me go back to the drawing board. How can I attack this from another angle? And I would say my upbringing prepared me for that, you know, just kind of growing up in Newark and, you know, a rough environment, it kind of built that grit. So that's one thing I'm grateful for. So once I got rejected, I'm like, all right, cool. It happens. You know, I've been battle tested my whole life. All right, I'm going to keep pushing. What can I learn? So I started shape shifting. Okay, I see this didn't work. Let me attack it from this angle. Got rejected again. Okay, that didn't work. Let me try to network. Let me try to go and actually visit Bloomberg, see if I know somebody. Go visit Bloomberg. Now I can leverage that. Oh, in my application, yada, yada, yada. I met this person when I toured the Bloomberg offices. I enjoyed this and that. Got rejected again. And then finally, you know, I got my foot into the door, you know. But it was just trial and error. And that's one thing I would say to people, you know, is never get discouraged. If you want something, you know, be strategic about it. Don't go in blindly. You know, if you get rejected, okay, what can you learn from that? And that's why failure is so important. But now, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, I'm actually at Bloomberg. I just hit my 1-year anniversary full time. And it's going very well. I'm extremely grateful again to be there, and it just shows that hard work and determination. You know, it pays off.
1,000%.
Yes, sir.
So you proved yourself to be battle tested, and you finally got your foot in the door. And then once you got in the door, you realized that you were dealing with a whole different you know, ball game. So yeah. I kind of want you to get into like the life of a Black financial analyst and, you know, the highs and lows that come with it, you know,
yeah,
dealing with the race aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. The race aspect is something that's very true, right? In the world in general, not just in the financial aspect, but just in general, you know. And one thing I would say is that I suffered. I wouldn't say suffered because I didn't really suffer. But one thing that sort of got to me was this whole imposter syndrome idea, right?
Okay.
Like, you know, you're so used to being in a certain space, you know, growing up in the inner city and everything. And now you're literally working at a huge global financial technology firm that's connected to Wall Street and all of these big banks. That was a totally different environment for me. So I would say imposter syndrome is something that affected me a little bit. And it still kind of hits me to this day sometimes. Like, you know, you'll question yourself like, wow, like, do I even belong here? Am I even supposed to be in this room? You know, because there's not a lot of people that look like me, to be frank, you know, mm-hmm. Let's just be honest. The financial space is not a lot of people of color, especially in higher positions, right? In positions of where you're actually controlling capital, where you're actually controlling how the company is looked upon, you know, there's not a lot of people of color. So there's a lot of times when I'm in rooms and I'm the only Black person in there. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I had to, again, it goes back to, you know, kind of rewiring your brain and rebranding and like shape-shifting, right? So you can either look at it as half full or half empty. I was looking at it from an imposter syndrome standpoint, like, wow, do I even belong in this room? I'm the only one here. But then I had to kind of switch my mindset, like, yo, like, I'm the only Black person here. That actually says a lot. You get what I'm saying? So rather than sort of kind of counting myself out, I shifted my perspective. And I'm like, yo, I'm in this room for a reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm Black and I'm in this room for a reason. I'm just as capable as anybody else to be in this room. You know, I can talk the language to anybody, you know, whether it's a CEO or whoever it is, you know, and I started to really pride myself on that, you know, and I found that it was very unique. But I do still think it's important to see more people of color in these spaces because representation do matters. And it maybe would have made it much easier for me to get my foot in the door if it was people in the door already that look like me. So that's my goal, is to kind of reach back and pull my people up and kind of get them into these rooms that I'm in, you know? Yeah, because representation matters for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
That leads me to the second part of the interview that I wanted to get into, which is talking about the investment group, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this is a group of like-minded people that, you know, put together resources in order to create better opportunities for each other. Yep. And in general, and I want you to talk about how this came together and, you know, you guys' goals.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. The investment group came about, well, just even before touching on that, just touching on group economics overall, right?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, group economics is becoming more of a thing, right? Rather than investing by yourself, you have more purchasing power when you invest with a group of people. So that's sort of how it sort of came about, you know? My partners and I, we created an investment group called HQ Capital. And the goal is to build wealth together rather than trying to do it alone, right? This is one quote I like, and they say, trying to get the words, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all sort of had that mindset where we know this is a long-term game. We all want to go far, right? It's not about one individual, but it's about a collective success. So a few of my homeboys that, you know, we grew up together playing ball and stuff like that. Now we all in our careers. What we did was we created an LLC. We created HQ Capital Investment Group, and we sort of pooled our money together to get into investments, ranging from regular stock market investments to private equity, or, you know, getting into food chains and things of that nature. Pretty much a wide variety of opportunities, you know, but it makes it much easier to invest. You know, say you wanted to get into an investment, it was $20,000, but it's only you. You got to front that whole 20. Rather, if it's you and nine other brothers, it's a total of 10 of y'all. Y'all each put $2,000 into that investment. Is much more feasible to make that happen. You know, so that's the whole premise behind, you know, group economics and coming together, is it take less capital on your behalf, but you have more purchasing power as a whole. And that's pretty much, you know, why we formed the investment group.
And in terms of the investment group, is it just for you guys to operate, or is it to bring other people in? How does it how would you explain it in terms of operations to somebody who is looking to get into something like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So every investment group have their pretty much their structure and how they go about bringing on new members. So our members is mainly like internal. So we use our own capital to invest. It's not like most funds where you take capital from outside sources and invest on their behalf and you get a certain percentage of that. Right now, we're pretty much using our own capital. But as far as the process, it is all Black men inside of the group. That's one of the premises of our group, is to build amongst Black men, to build wealth amongst Black men, and create opportunities for inner city youth of color as well, and to uplift our community. So that is the goal. But as far as like recruitment and things like that, we're sort of still ironing out the total amount of members we want to have. But as far as the process, you know, there's an application process and an interview process that we go through with every candidate and things like that. It's more so on a recommendation sort of base. You will have to have an internal referral. And then based on that referral, we'll reach out to the candidate, you know, if they're interested in applying, they apply, and then we interview them. And then based on the interview, you know, we kind of collectively come to an agreement.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at this point in your career, you've made multiple investments in the stock market. You've started your own business in terms of the capital investment group. With HQ, and you know, you have a good job, and now you've moved on to another venture, which is Loaded Bases. So I kind of want to get into the formation of that, because, you know, merch is important, and, you know, the message behind your merch is what I really want to get into. But I just want to talk about the process in general and what inspired it.
Nah, I'm over here smiling, man, because Loaded Bases, man, it's
I could tell you take a lot of pride in that. So
I got the Loaded Bases on right now, too.
Word.
But I was actually inspired by Nipsey Hussle, man. I was inspired by Nipsey Hussle and Lewis Hamilton. So I'm a F1 racing fan, you know, but I'm also a fan of Nipsey Hussle. So I kind of got this idea, you know, Nip got the song, you know, Loaded Bases, that's my motivation. And it sort of came from that, and Loaded Bases was kind of, it kept playing in my head, you know. So I kind of did my research, and I went to the USPTO, the trademark site, to see if it was taken or anything, if anybody owned that. You know, I want to make sure I wasn't stepping on no toes, you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know, because I got a high, you know, respect for Nipsey Hussle and everything like that. So I did my research from a legal standpoint, and I wanted to make sure that it wasn't taken or anything. But I noticed Nip, he had the marathon, right? TMC, the marathon clothing. That was his thing. But he just had a song called Loaded Bases. So I'm like, all right, let me break this down and really see. So I did the legal work, and I saw that it was available. So I trademarked it. I created the LLC and everything. And the whole premise behind Loaded Bases is about betting on yourself, about going big, right? Now, loading your bases is about preparation, putting yourself in the best position to succeed. Now, loaded bases, it's also a baseball terminology. When you load the bases and you hit a home run, that's a grand slam. You achieve the highest number of points you can achieve in baseball. So I kind of shifted that. And that analogy, I noticed it ties into life. So the same way you can load your bases in baseball, I look at loaded bases as loading your bases in terms of your ultimate goal. You know, if you have a goal, if you have anything you're striving towards, you're part of that loaded bases family because you have to prepare to get to a certain point. Even if you're an athlete, right? You got to go to class, right? You got to take care of your body. You got to eat right. All of that is part of loading your bases so you can go for that grand slam, which may be to make it to the NBA, which is the ultimate goal. But to get to that ultimate goal, there's certain layers. There's certain things you got to prepare for to set yourself up, you know? So I just started crafting a business idea, a business strategy and everything. And I'm like, yo, this literally ties to everybody, no matter the color of your skin, no matter how old you are, no matter what field you work in. If you have a goal, loaded bases applies to you because preparation goes into that. And as long as you prepare yourself so you can put yourself in the best position possible to win, then, you know, you're part of that loaded bases family. So that's what it's about. But it also ties in to the financial literacy aspect, right? You know, Nip, he was big on uplifting his community and things like that. I believe I was inspired by Nip, and I think I can speak for most people who are inspired by Nip, is because he come from where he come from, but yet his goal was financial empowerment. His goal was to uplift the community and things like that. So I can see myself in him, you know, like, yo, I come from the projects too. You get what I'm saying? I was surrounded by
talk about it.
You get what I'm saying? So like we all can relate to it. And I think that's why we connect with Nip so much, because his message was just, it was pure. He was honest with himself and he was about uplifting his people. And I think when you do that, you become real dangerous as well. You know, because they don't want our community, you know, the Black community to be uplifted. They want to keep us where we at. But, you know, my goal is to, again, you know, inspire the youth through financial literacy. So that they don't have to be in survival mode no more, because I had to grow up in survival mode, and being in survival mode, that's no way to really live, man.
1,000%. You're preaching right now. That leads me into, you know, your latest venture, which is the book. It's very important. This is a very important reason. This is the reason why I wanted you to come on the podcast at all. And, you know, I think that this is a very important tool for people to use starting out, especially from coming from where we're from. So I want you to get into being in control.
For sure. I just want to say one thing, you know, I appreciate what you're doing for the community, man, and kind of capturing people's stories.
Absolutely.
I think that's important, you know, and I just want to say thank you. And I'm extremely grateful for you having me, you know, on your show, on your podcast.
1,000%.
For sure. And as far as the book came about, again, through just wanting to uplift my community and wanting to provide them with something that I didn't have growing up. You know, if you think about it, it all comes down to problems and solutions, right? Most people focus on the problems, but I think it's important to focus on solutions. That's how products come about. That's how services come about. It's just sort of bridging the gap between problems and solutions. Somebody steps in and say, okay, all right, I'm going to create a product that actually solves this. So that was my purpose. You know, I didn't have no one teaching me about financial literacy growing up, you know, which kind of set me back. Nobody taught me about credit. I had to go to college, get a credit card, and then max out my credit card, and then it was sent to collections. I had to learn that through, like, you get what I'm saying? I had to literally learn that by going through it. You feel me?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of people, you know, a lot of youth that's going through the same exact thing. And it's like, yo, if I could save them from going through what I went through, like, by all means, I'm going to do that. So that was my purpose of creating Be In Control, a beginner's guide to stocks, investing, and financial literacy. So what it pretty much does is it breaks down a stock market. It breaks down financial markets in simple terms. I wrote it from a junior and senior standpoint, but also from a standpoint of someone who has no knowledge about the, about that space. And I've been receiving great feedback. It's very digestible. A lot of people like the knowledge checks that's after at the end of each chapter. And I wrote the knowledge checks specifically a certain way to build confidence. So it's very good to sort of test people after they read some, because it helps with retaining the information rather than waiting all the way to the end of the book to kind of give them a knowledge check. So what I do is I structure it at the end of each chapter. So after they read something and then they run into these questions, the questions are much easier to answer, and it makes it much easier for them to retain the information, and it builds their confidence as well, because after you just read some, it's fresh in your mind. So it's kind of like a feedback loop, you know? So I built this specifically to that, to help build confidence in youth, because that's one thing that's going to get them to that next level, is building their confidence. You know, my goal isn't to break anyone down. I could have easily went in there and made questions that were literally extremely difficult to answer as far as equations and things of that. But no, I kept it simple. I kept it in, you know, layman's terms for everyone, no matter who you are, to be able to understand, so I can help build that confidence, so we can begin to be on the same page and build that community of wealth.
1,000%. So what would you say is the next step for you? You got your book, you got the clothing brand, you got the job. Everything's looking up. Everything's going up and up. So, like, what's the plan for the future?
Yeah, my plan is to continue to grow, to continue to scale. That's one thing I'm focused on right now, is execution, but also scaling. My goal is to get my book, and one, in schools all over North, in high schools literally all over North. I want to start here in the community where I was born at. And then I want to expand globally to have my book in all of these schools, especially in the inner city, because I believe we need this information. This is information that they keep from us, but it's important that it's important for us to know. So again, my goal is to continue to uplift my people, to uplift my community, to spread financial knowledge and inspire the world through financial literacy. My goal is to continue to create different streams of revenue and of income to be able to control my time. I believe that's extremely important, you know, for us to be able to control our time, because once we control our time, we get out of survival mode. Once you're out of survival mode, you're able to do what you're truly happy and what you're truly passionate about. You know, growing up in survival mode, I had to work jobs that I didn't enjoy working. You get what I'm saying? Like, literally, I had every job you could think of, from being a waiter, from an Amazon driver. Like, people, you know, they laugh once they hear me say that. But like, man, I worked every type of job, but I had to, because I was in survival mode, you know, and I'm still in survival mode. Right. I'm learning. Mm-hmm. I'm making investments. But the truth is, most of us live in survival mode, meaning that we can't stop doing what we're doing. If we stop working, like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So everything stops.
Exactly. You know, so the goal is to sort of get out of that, to where we create passive income that comes in every month, whether we work or not. And that will give us the opportunity to do what we're truly happy about, whether that be, okay, I just want to spend time with my family and take a trip out the country. You know, so that's my goal, is to sort of get people to start thinking like that, to shift their mindset to where they want to control their time rather than them having to go up and go to work for somebody. You know, because, you know, we're all capable of so much more than we even can conceive, you know.
Absolutely. And on that note, brother, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. How about you let everybody know where they could find you on social media?
Nah, for sure, man. I appreciate you for having me. You can find me on Instagram at call me underscore Q. So that's KALLME_Q. I know most people probably not even on LinkedIn.
Plug the LinkedIn for sure.
Yeah. I'm on LinkedIn too. If you just type in my name, Quasan Lindsay, QUASANLINDSAY, you can find me on LinkedIn. But yeah, those are the main two platforms. I'm working on a TikTok right now. That'll be more to come, where I'm gonna be posting about some financial literacy and stuff like that. But that's to come.
Absolutely. All right, brother. Thank you for coming on the show. And
I appreciate you, man. Again, I love what you're doing, capturing stories, uplifting the community, man. Again, it truly means a lot. I'm grateful to be able to speak to you, and I appreciate you for having me here.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'll see you guys at the next episode. Peace.
All right. Peace.